Welcome. I'm Ethan Elkind, and this is Your Call's One Planet series. Later in today's show, we're going to get into how Utah used actors, AI, stagecraft, and non-disclosure agreements to sway public opinion and push for control of 18.5 million acres of federal land. Utah Senator Mike Lee has been a major voice behind the push to sell off public lands for development. But first, we're going to talk about how cutbacks and lack of enforcement at Trump's EPA could leave communities more exposed to deadly air pollution, from wildfires to industrial emissions and car exhaust. In his latest piece in Grist, our guest today, Matt Simon, writes, "Monitoring air quality is key to forecasting and assessing wildfire smoke, but air quality scientists worry that EPA budget and job cuts will make it difficult to get air quality information to people, endangering public health." Matt Simon is a senior writer at Grist covering climate solutions. He's the author of three books, most recently, A Poison Like No Other, How Microplastics Corrupted Our Planet and Our Bodies. Good to have you on the show today, Matt.
And thank you for having me.
So, Matt, earlier this month, the Bay Area Air Quality Management District issued an air quality advisor urging people to monitor pollution levels due to massive wildfires that were going on in Canada, and it's only expected to get worse. We have hotter summers that are fueling a higher risk of wildfires, and of course, in California, we're facing the same threats, and that's why we rely on a range of air monitoring tools to keep track of the air quality. And as you note in your piece, monitoring that air quality is really key to forecasting and assessing wildfire smoke in particular. Can you talk about what the recent cutbacks have meant to that air quality monitoring process and what is at stake here?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the base level, the proposed budget for the EPA next year halves the amount of money going to that agency. So that is potentially going to come with thousands of job cuts. And the scientists that I spoke to are now worried about what that means for air quality. So as you mentioned, wildfires in particular, burning much hotter, much bigger, sending lots of smoke into the places in the Western United States, like California. I'm in San Francisco. We get lots of wildfire smoke, but also increasingly in the Eastern United States. Right now, Canadian wildfires are spewing smoke still for about a month into the Midwest and Eastern states. So if we lose funding at the EPA, we potentially lose people who have expertise in that sort of wildfire smoke pollution, but also the people that are running these very sophisticated air quality monitoring instruments, not only maintain them, but processing that data and then sending that data to scientists and other state air agencies. So that's really what's at stake here.
And you mentioned this is proposed budget. How likely is that to go through? We know that they're debating the budget right now in the U.S. Senate.
Yeah, hard to tell, but it's very clear that across the Trump administration, they are slashing federal spending. And when it comes to the EPA, that is potentially quite dangerous. So there's a growing body of evidence that wildfire smoke in particular is extremely hazardous to human health. It's about 10 times more toxic than regular air pollution from cars and other fossil fuels. It gets deep in the lungs. It comes often with lots of heavy metals involved if it's burning through homes and things like that. So we need this money going to these agencies to monitor that sort of thing, both so we can tell people, okay, this smoke is forecasted to come your way, but also for scientists to dig deeply into that data to, for example, correlate a wildfire smoke emission with hospital visits and then see how that influences public health at the time.
And what else besides wildfire smoke monitoring is potentially at risk here? I mean, there are other sources of pollution as well. What are you looking at? What are you worried about in terms of what those cutbacks could mean?
These EPA monitors are in place for a very good reason. It's actually quite interesting. It's not necessarily that we're just telling people you are going to be exposed to wildfire smoke in the coming hours. These are actually in place to determine the effectiveness of policies. So the Clean Air Act, many decades ago, for example, very much improved air quality across the United States. These EPA monitors are in place to actually monitor that. So when we put in this sort of intervention, what effect does it have? And the concern now is that if we're cutting EPA's budget, we're losing some of these monitors. At the same time, the Trump administration might be cutting back public health programs and things like that. We will be somewhat in the dark here if we don't know what worsening air quality means for public health going forward.
And this is exceptionally timely because, of course, we're now in summertime and there's a quickly growing brush fire in Southern California that's spread to at least 1,400 acres, dubbed the Wolf Fire, first reported yesterday around 3 p.m. So this is unfortunately very timely for the season that we're in right now, which seems to just be keep getting longer and longer into the fall as climate change is doing its thing with our air here in California, at least, and our weather here in California. And of course, this is not just about cutting back on monitoring, but you also reported that the EPA is planning to restructure how it regulates air quality and is dismantling two offices that are charged with regulating air and climate pollution and running these programs. And that includes the Office of Atmospheric Protection and the Office of Air Quality Planning and Standards. Can you talk about that restructuring effort and what's at stake with those offices? Yeah, Matt, can you hear me? Not sure if we've lost Matt. Matt, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's a Zoom connection issue
Perhaps.
on whose end here. I apologize for that, but yeah, wanted to ask if you could talk about the restructuring of EPA and those two offices charged with regulating air and climate pollution.
Yeah, sure. So this is federal leadership on these sorts of things. We need these, first of all, monitors from the EPA that's looking after air quality, but also these offices that are tasked with ensuring that people across the United States have good air. That comes from, of course, legislation like the Clean Air Act, but it requires constant monitoring because you might have a factory pop up in one part of the country and worsen air quality. We need to be able to determine, first of all, what is in that air, that bad air, but also how it might influence public health. And returning to this point that scientists are also using this data, working with these federal agencies to determine the impacts that this has on public health. So messing with these agencies could really impact that at a time when also they are loosening other air quality regulations and potentially impacting health that way.
Well, if you're just joining us, this is Ethan Elkind, and you're listening to Your Calls One Planet series. We're talking about EPA cutbacks on air quality monitoring and what that might mean for your public health, your safety, particularly as we head now into wildfire season and wildfire smoke, as our guest Matt Simon just described, has tremendous negative effects on our lungs, on our health. Matt Simon is our guest. He's a senior writer at Grist covering climate solutions, also the author of three books, most recently, A Poison Like No Other: How Microplastics Corrupted Our Planet and Our Bodies. And we want to open the phone lines to you, our listeners. Do you use any of these air quality monitoring data or services? Are you concerned about what those cutbacks might mean? And if you do use some of the EPA data, that EPA air quality monitoring sites, we'd love to know how you use it, how it's helpful to you. You can join the conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or if you'd rather email in any questions or comments that you might have about this topic, the number or the line, the email line is yourcall@kalw.org. So, Matt, we're talking about federal cutbacks, but what might be able to take the place, if anything, of that federal data? Is it possible for states or local governments or private sources of data to step in and fill whatever gap might be created by these federal cutbacks?
Yeah, we have a number of publicly available free services. People might have heard of Purple Air. And whenever we have a smoke event here in the Bay Area, it seems like everybody's on Purple Air, determining what their air quality might be. These are cheaper instruments. They're highly effective. I don't mean to downplay them, but they detect particulate matter 2.5. So that is the very, very small stuff that can get deep in the lungs. That gives you really good reading across a very wide distribution. You can look at one of these maps, and these sensors are absolutely everywhere. But what those sensors can't do is give you a breakdown of what is in that wildfire smoke. That's where the EPA monitors and monitors on the state level, like in California, step in, and scientists are actually, they call it speciation, breaking down what is in that wildfire smoke. I've written previously that the Canadian wildfires are burning through old mining areas where they have soils just loaded with arsenic and lead and these sorts of things. Scientists are concerned that that is mobilizing those toxins into that smoke and blowing them into the Midwest and Eastern United States. So it's yeah, it's purple air is great. Don't get me wrong. It's extremely useful to determine, okay, you could have asthma. I don't want them to go outside into this bad air. But it's these really sophisticated monitors that are $30,000, $40,000 monitored by the EPA that really help scientists not only determine what is in that smoke, but then determine based on hospitalizations how that might be impacting public health.
And Matt, in addition to the cutbacks, what about reliability of the EPA air monitoring tool going forward? What are the concerns around what these cutbacks might mean to how much we can even trust the data that is there?
Yeah, so the concern right now is that if we are losing funding for the EPA, we are not only getting rid of jobs that are people, monitoring the monitors, maintaining them, that sort of thing. These are very sophisticated, sensitive instruments. But it's also about the people that are collating that data and sending it out to scientists. This is another concern with the NOAA, so like a weather service in the federal government, losing jobs. It's not just about who's going to be monitoring weather balloons and buoys and things like that. It's about gathering up that data and freely and publicly sending that out to scientists and the public at large.
And as we look at what all these cutbacks mean, I have to ask the question, why are those in power in the federal government doing this specifically to the air quality monitoring? I mean, I understand, Republican MAGA opposition to government action, to regulation, but in this case, it's just about data. And on something like wildfire smoke, what do you think is the motivation here? Or is it just that they don't care and they're just taking a sledgehammer to everything?
Yeah, I guess I can't speculate, but maybe part of it is that people don't really care about air quality, right? It's kind of this nerdy, seemingly abstract thing. It's like, how bad could the air possibly be? But for many decades now, we've had the Clean Air Act in place that has vastly improved air quality, both from like vehicle emissions, emissions from power plants, these sorts of things. It is something that we can't just rest on. We did this work legislatively. Great, we have these policies in place, but this requires constant monitoring from these EPA instruments that are, again, extremely sensitive, extremely expensive. We need to keep on top of this because mostly because of the growing threat of wildfire smoke. As the climate changes, wildfires burn hotter, they produce more smoke, and it's pouring into more areas. Like the Eastern United States, the Midwest didn't used to be wildfire country. Now they have to contend with that, but they need to know in more detail what is in that smoke and how they can put measures in place to keep people safe.
We're speaking with Matt Simon, senior writer at Grist, covering climate solutions, and we're talking about EPA cutbacks to air quality monitoring and the data that we get on air quality, including for wildfire smoke. Unfortunately, now we're in that season, wildfire season here in California and the West Coast in general, and as well Canada, and we're seeing wildfires as well on the East Coast. So this issue of air quality monitoring affects so many people within this country. This is Your Calls One Planet series. I'm your host, Ethan Elkind, and we have the phone lines open. We would love to hear from you, our listener. Do you check these air quality apps? What platforms do you use when you want to find out about air quality? What are you concerned about that you might be missing, the information that you might need for your planning your own time outside, or what public health issues might be implicated? The number to call to join the conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or go ahead and send an email to yourcall@kalw.org. Now, Matt, earlier you did mention that scientists are using these EPA air quality data when they're doing long-term research. Can you talk about some of the research that they're doing and what exactly is at stake, just from a sort of public science perspective?
Sure. I think the big thing here is, first of all, determining, again, what is in that wildfire smoke. And like, weirdly enough, we are getting a better picture of that even now in the present day, because it is very difficult for these monitors, unless they're very expensive and sophisticated, to pick up what is in that PM2.5. So at the core of it, of course, we have charred plant material from wildfires. That in and of itself is on that size. 2.5 refers to microns, so it's a millionth of a meter. It's very, very small. That is so small that it can get very, very deep in the lungs. The health effects are numerous. So people with asthma are particularly affected by wildfire smoke, but it also exacerbates health problems or heart problems as well. So we're just getting a better picture here of how exactly wildfire smoke is impacting human health, but we need to know what is in that, where it is blowing. And we're getting kind of this interesting picture, interesting maybe not the right word, but it's a more complicated picture where wildfire smoke is composed of these sorts of particulate matter, but it's also transforming over time. There's new research showing that as it cloud is moving through the atmosphere over hours and even days, that it forms ozone. And this is an extremely powerful gas that is very bad for asthmatic people as well. So we're getting a better picture of wildfire smoke in particular, but also correlating that with human health problems, hospitalizations in areas that are then affected by wildfire smoke.
And Matt, I know for many researchers, it's important to have what they call longitudinal data, where they're able to access data from years past to compare it to the present. Is there a risk that not only will EPA not be monitoring the air quality going forward, but that past data may be lost or deleted or not maintained in some way?
Yeah, obviously a concern. We actually saw this a couple of months ago. NOAA stopped keeping track of billion-dollar disasters, usually hurricanes are the most expensive disasters in the United States. They are no longer maintaining that database, and that leaves people in the dark about those sorts of very, very expensive disasters, and informs where we insure and where we rebuild, that sort of thing. There will be, I think, in the case of wildfire smoke monitoring, a lot of other monitors on the state level and Purple Air, of course, filling that gap. But we need also the EPA's data to feed into the models that Purple Air is using and state agencies are using. None of these agencies or services are working in isolation. They're all very intricately intertwined. We need them working together to provide a full picture of wildfire smoke particular.
And as we look at these cutbacks and we think about the groups that are affected, I mean, you mentioned academic researchers, but there's also nonprofits, community organizations, states that all rely on this data. Is there a pushback? What are the chances that this might get stopped, that these cutbacks might get stopped facing political opposition? And I could even imagine bipartisan opposition, given how wildfire smoke doesn't know any political boundaries. And this is a very basic public health issue. And it's really just ultimately about information, not necessarily regulation. So what are the prospects here for pushback? And are there any coalitions being mobilized?
I think we will see a good amount of pushback, especially among scientists who are doing this work, but also community organizations. My co-writer of this piece and I spoke to a couple of these groups that are lamenting losing this this flow of data, and potentially looking for ways to fill it otherwise. But that is going to require funding for expensive monitors that you really only use on that federal EPA level. This is going to be especially problematic for marginalized communities that are already dealing with very high levels of pollution. So around industrial areas in particular, in order to understand a problem, you need to measure that problem. So maybe funding will come from elsewhere to buy these sorts of very expensive instruments. But really, we need not just the technology from the EPA, but that expertise of very bright scientists to determine, first of all, what's in wildfire smoke and how we can better monitor that, both on the federal level, but also on the local level.
And of course, once they're laid off, they may not necessarily be interested in coming back on board in future years to a federal government that is not appreciating their service. Well, we've got a listener joining the conversation here. I want to welcome Phil from Oakland to the conversation. Phil, welcome to Your Calls One Planet series.
Oh, cheers. Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Great. What's your question for Matt?
Well, I mean, I guess I was wondering something about kind of the top, what I call it the topping up effect. And it just is kind of an anecdote from my own experience where it was like the first night I feel like the Paradise fire smoke reached Oakland. I was living alone in an apartment. I had my windows open. I wake up at like 4:30 in the morning to the sound of like, which is not actually my fire alarm going off because it didn't work. It was just a sound of ringing in my ears. I wake up, I get out of bed, I stumble, fall to the floor because I can't walk in a straight line. My eyes are swollen, almost completely shut. The world feels like it's spinning. I have nowhere to go. So what do? I go to the BART. I wait for the mall to open in San Francisco. There was already a line forming outside of it of people, I guess, trying to do the same thing. And then we all just like go into the like downstairs food court of that mall, like Westfield Mall or whatever, and like spend the whole day just trying to avoid the smoke. But I felt, you know, for the next 2 weeks, that ringing in my ears pretty much didn't go away. And if I ever went outside and experienced more of that smoke, it would just like immediately 0 to 100 top me up as if I had had like a huge exposure. And I feel like that sensitivity has kind of lasted for a while. And I know I've been like tracking like my VO2 max, like was cut in half, never been the same. But I was wondering if that's like a thing. Maybe I just have like post-traumatic stress from it, but I feel like there's almost a topping up effect where if you've kind of reached a ton of exposure to this stuff, like now I feel like, you know, just being exposed to fire smoke kind of tips me up like in a way that you never used to.
Well, Phil, I really appreciate you relaying your story here. I'm sorry about the negative health effects, and I think it really illustrates what's at stake here. And Matt, I know you're not a scientist or a doctor, but curious if you have any response to Phil's story here, and especially noting that, Phil, you know, we come from Oakland, and many parts of Oakland are what we would call a disadvantaged community, already impacted by all sorts of harmful air emissions, air pollution from the port and from the interstate. But Matt, your thoughts about Phil's story here and his challenges?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things that this brings up. I think, first of all, as you hint at, this equity angle to this, that if you are a rich person with a perfectly sealed, like hermetically sealed home because you have great energy efficiency, you have HEPA filters blowing all day, you might not be in too much of danger from wildfire smoke unless you're going outside. But if you are an outdoor worker, agricultural worker, construction worker that has to be outside and working, not only in the heat, but, you know, moving around, breathing heavily in this wildfire smoke, that is a huge issue. You are not going to sit in your hermetically sealed home and work on a computer all day. But I think the caller also gets at this really important psychological angle that we are increasingly exposed to the smoke. We are trying our very best to get away from it, but that is not always possible. And it has both this physical health effect in our lungs and in our hearts. These particles probably get into our brains to some degree as well. But it's this psychological sort of dread that not only are we experiencing this at the moment, but we have to look forward in the coming years and decades to increasingly bad wildfires and increasing amounts of wildfire smoke. So that, I think that the caller gets at a really important angle here, that it's not just about considering the physical health, it's about mental health as well.
Well, I want to thank Phil for dialing in and sharing that story. Matt, last question for you, as we're just about out of time here, is what can be done, particularly at the state level, thinking about the state of California, a very pro-environmental state government, voters in California generally very much in favor of environmental action. What can voters do? What can the state of California do to remedy this situation and ensure that people like Phil are protected, if we face another mega fire?
It's really about preventative measures. Controlled burns go a very long way in clearing the fuel from a landscape in a measured sort of way. So you light these small fires and get rid of that accumulated brush. It produces less smoke, and that means the landscape burns less catastrophically. The challenge is that California is a big place, and the American West is an even bigger place. And when you're thinking about Canada, where these current fires are burning, it is absolutely massive. And it's very difficult to reach these places to do these sorts of controlled burns. There's just no way that we can properly fight these fires at these sizes. And so, we're at Grist, it's a climate change focused website. So I have to say that at the very core here, we have to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and limit warming at the base level. That is the only way to really head off these challenges, is to make the atmosphere less thirsty, because when it gets hot, it sucks the moisture out of the vegetation. Reducing emissions, doing more controlled burns, monitoring wildfire smoke as best we can, and helping get people into safe spaces when we have these events, such as malls and cooling centers, these sorts of things where we know the air quality is much better. It sounds complicated because it is, but unfortunately, it's a very complicated problem. And the way to face it is not to cut the EPA's budget, but to actually put more money into these sorts of monitoring measures.
Well, it is a complicated problem, but I appreciate your work to explain it very clearly to the public and inform the public about what is happening. Matt Simon, senior writer at Grist, covering climate solutions. Thank you so much for joining us here on Your Calls One Planet series.
And thanks for having me.
And of course, we'll be monitoring the budget proposal that is now winding its way through the U.S. Senate, not only for how it will affect this issue of air quality monitoring, but all sorts of topics related to the environment on future One Call, Your Call, One Planet series episodes. Coming up next, we're going to talk about a concerted PR campaign to support the sell-off of federal public lands. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this very short break.